This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to this Joy 94.9 podcast.
We want to hear from you.
It's time for our listener survey. So head to the Joy website and let us know what you love about the station and your presenters.
Maybe you'd like to share your thoughts on Joy's program production team, the volunteers behind Joy Podcasts.
The results of this survey will assist us in continuing to be the best possible station we can be.
Head to joy.org.au and have your say. Joy 94.9, your voice, your radio station.
Joined by Sarah Ramantanis, and today we're joined by Professor Margaret Kalea.
Thank you for inviting me.
Now, the reason we have brought you onto the show today is we are currently doing a segment on the effects of racial discrimination on mental health. I contacted Professor Margaret after reading a report by the Lewitcher Institute in 2013 that looked at the effects of racial discrimination on Aboriginal communities in Victoria. Now, we should get started right there. What were the general findings of this report? Firstly, is there a correlation between receiving racial discrimination and mental illness?
So what we found is about 97% of the people who were interviewed reported that they had been exposed to an incident of racism in the last year. So there was very high levels of exposure. Two-thirds of those people who experienced 12 or more incidents of racism reported high or very high levels of psychological distress. So there was a clear link in that study. And we've also found, and that's fairly consistent with studies throughout the world. For example, with my colleague, Professor Yin Paredes, who led the study, we did a review of 293 studies of the links between racism and health, which were published between 1983 and 2013. And of those studies, 227 found links between exposure to racism and poorer mental health.
Verbal abuse was reported as one of the most common forms of racial discrimination that people often face. Would you agree with this?
Yes. So 92% of people were called racist names, but there were also quite high levels of people being ignored or treated with suspicion. So about 85% of people said that, but up to two-thirds of people said they were spat at, had objects thrown at them, or were hit and threatened because of their race.
I brought up verbal abuse because on our show last week, that was abuse was the one thing that Senator Leanne Helm felt that Article 18C was unfairly prohibiting, though it does sound like from those statistics that verbal abuse is still a pretty common occurrence for people who are facing racial discrimination.
Yes, it was certainly among the most common forms of racism experienced.
Now, you mentioned before that they were showing high levels of psychological distress. Could you explain a bit more how this would relate to conditions such as depression or anxiety?
So, for example, there's a couple of different pathways via which we think racism might influence mental health and, in fact, physical health, because there's quite a lot of literature that suggests that it's also related to physical health. So one thing is any kind of stressor in the environment can cause a stress response in the body that increases our allostatic load, which can lead us to be more prone to mental health and physical health problems. But there are a couple of other pathways that are also important when we think about racism. One thing is some of the determinants of racism mean that people who might be more likely to expose to racism are also less likely to have access to the resources that might reduce negative effects on their health. So in terms of, finances, all of those things. The other thing is that racism can also influence people's help-seeking behaviours. So, for example, another study we did looked at the impacts of experienced race in healthcare settings as opposed to other settings. Because one of the things we wanted to test was, is there evidence that some settings are worse than others? And we found, in fact, that it was the impact of racism in health settings was much more likely to be associated with higher levels of psychological distress than racism in other settings or not being exposed to racism at all.
I think from what I remember from the report, I did read other factors, other settings included things like job interviews or housing applications. So things that, you know, would probably be considered quite high pressure in that they are quite important for creating foundations for your own support.
Yes, that's right.
One of the things I also noticed from that was from your report was that many of the Indigenous people who were interviewed expressed that they felt a lot of psychological distress at the very idea of reporting the abuse that they were facing.
Yeah, I mean, I think people certainly felt a lot of concern about reporting the abuse, and also there was very little evidence that anything individuals could do to cope with racism actually reduced the harms associated with it. So we asked people about coping strategies because one of the things people often think about is perhaps, you know, some of these negative mental health effects are because, you know, some individuals are less resilient than others or don't have the right sort of coping strategies. So what we found was that there was very little in terms of the 12 coping strategies we asked individuals about that could reduce the negative effects of racism on their health.
Could you go through those 12 coping strategies with us?
So they included things like, you know, laughing it off, talking to other people about the experience, just, you know, not reacting, ignoring the perpetrator, those kinds of things, and, you know, confronting the perpetrator as well or making complaints.
Based on what you did find with this report, do you believe any change or removal of Article 18C of the Racial Discrimination Act would have an effect on the mental health of non-white Australians?
It is difficult to know. There have been so few cases brought under 18C. It's not clear what positive or negative effect actually a change to the Racial Discrimination Act might bring. Certainly, it's not likely to decrease it.
One of the other points that we will bring up was the reason that a lot of the MPs, including Senator Leyenhelm, felt that we need to remove Article 18C or change it is because he argued that if people are able to air their racial tensions or racial abuses out in public, then we are better able to rebut their arguments. Do you think that is accurate, or do you think that's an accurate response, or do you think that is what would happen?
I think the provisions of 18D that enable people to, and in fact provide exemptions from any kind of action under 18C, which allow people to express their opinions as part of artistic works, academic works, and for, in fact, any public purpose, mean that those provisions are already there.
No, of course, but Senator Leyenhelm was actually talking directly about abuse. That was what he did say he felt needed to have space to be aired. Do you feel that airing racial abuse would diminish it?
I think that's quite unlikely.
Now, for our final question, we have been concentrating on Aboriginal Australians as they have been the majority of the reports I have managed to find. Why do you think that there is still a perception in the broader community that there can be no correlation between what is seen as a medical diagnosis and something else that is seen as an environmental factor?
I don't know that I agree that there's not seen in the community a strong link. I mean, for example, many people would accept that bullying has, you know, terrible social and emotional as well as can have physical impacts on people. So I think there is an understanding and a growing understanding in the community that sometimes psychological effects like discrimination, like bullying, can have a big impact on people's health and that we need to address those. I think there just needs to be an expansion of the understanding that that probably applies to a whole range of things that we find stressful in the world.
Have you been following Beyond Blue's recent campaign to work against discrimination, particularly about the isolating behaviours that I heard were really commonly reported as well during the 2013 report?
I'm not specifically familiar with Beyond Blue's campaign at the moment, but and certainly in terms of addressing isolating behaviours, those are a really important source of stress for people, so it's commendable.
Why do you feel that there is now this push to water down the Racial Discrimination Act? John Howard recently spoke out agreeing that it needed to be changed. Do you have any insight into why we're now seeing this real push to allow more racially toned language or racially incited conversation?
I have to say, I find it confusing and bemusing. I can see no real policy imperative driving it, and nor do I think it reflects the priorities of the Australian electorate.
Do you believe that it is possible to really understand the effects of racial discrimination as a white person?
It's always difficult for us to travel in other people's shoes, and I think it would be almost impossible for us for non-Indigenous Australians to completely understand the terrible impact of colonisation and the legacy that's had on Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people, as hard as we might try.
Thank you so much for your time, Margaret. We really appreciate it. Thank you for joining us on The Informer.
Joy's News and Current Affair program. Have your say. Has experiencing discrimination affected your mental health? Text us at 0427 JOY949 or email us at onair@joy.org.au. Beyond Blue has found that discrimination against Indigenous Australians is considered common,
with rates of up to 15% to 30% reporting a discrimination activity within the last 6 months after Beyond Blue's research.
One in five non-Indigenous Australians admit they would discriminate in some situations. One in five, which is 21%, admit they would move away if an Indigenous Australian sat near them, and the same amount admit they would watch the actions of an Indigenous Australian in a retail environment. One in 10, so 12%, would tell jokes about Indigenous Australians. One in 10 would also avoid sitting next to an Indigenous Australian on public transport.
While a lot of these activities would not fall under 18C or be prevented by 18C or 18D, the continuous levels of psychological distress that these acts can cause have been used to contribute to the fact that Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people report levels of depression and anxiety at nearly twice the level of the non-Indigenous people of this country. Over half of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people who experience racial discrimination report feeling psychological distress, which can go on to develop anxiety and depression. Almost one third of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people experience very high levels of psychological distress, nearly three times the rate for non-Indigenous Australians. The effect of discrimination is a key topic in today's news for the LGBTI community, with both Labor and a combination of Green Independent members of the lower house making their first push to secure a free vote in the parliament on the subject of same-sex marriage.
While introducing Labor's bill for marriage equality, Leader of the Opposition Mr. Shorten noted the higher suicide rate among sexually diverse Australians and said one suicide would be one too many.
The effect a campaign against same-sex marriage would have on LGBTI people and their mental health has been a key argument against the plebiscite. Members of the community have referenced the public vote on decriminalising homosexuality in Tasmania, an event which queer comedian Hannah Gatsby has attributed to the development of her own anxiety and self-esteem issues. Rodney Croom, an LGBT activist, retired from the Australian Marriage Equality Organisation, saying that if he did not do everything he could to stop a plebiscite and there was an eventual suicide, as what happened during the public vote in Tasmania, he wouldn't be able to live with himself. The issues of mental health in discriminated groups is becoming an increasingly mainstream topic. As we move through how to best support people going through mental health issues due to discrimination, we're now joined by Professor Alan Fells from the National Mental Health Commission. Thank you so much for joining us, Alan.
Pleasure.
On the show today, we have been talking about the links between discrimination and mental health. Now, as the Chair Professor for the National Mental Health Commission, could you give us a brief idea of what the Commission's role is?
Yeah, so we're independent of the government and we report on the state of mental health, and also we're available to talk about some general issues and causes of mental health problems.
So that leads quite well into our next topic, which is the suggestion that racial discrimination and being on the receiving end of racial discrimination and by proxy discrimination of any sort can cause mental health issues. Now, do you believe that there is a correlation between receiving discrimination and having issues with mental health?
Yes, I think it's pretty clear and obvious that discrimination or bullying at work or in a community setting. Discrimination do contribute to poor mental health. We know that young people who are bullied or discriminated against or made fun of in terms of their sexual orientation are at risk of higher rates of poor mental and physical health and of suicidal behaviour. And that can carry over into adulthood. And another significant problem, besides what I would have thought was the obvious direct impact on mental health, is that stigma and discrimination reduces help seeking. About two-thirds of people who've had some kind of mental health problem in the last 12 months have not sought help, and the discriminatory behaviour, it compounds self-stigma, you know, labelling yourself as having a problem. Mm-hmm. It discourages people from participating fully in treatment, and that has a negative effect on their recovery and health. They may withdraw from daily activities. So I'm quite concerned about discrimination and stigma in relation to people's sexual orientation.
Mental health in the LGBTR community has become an increasingly talked about topic, especially discussions about things like the Safe Schools program and finding those support networks for people who are facing discrimination.
More than twice as many homosexual or bisexual people report having a mental disorder or anxiety disorder lasting 12 months or more than heterosexual people in Australia. And it's to be expected this number would be even greater when taking into account transgender, intersex and other gender diverse people.
Absolutely. Now, with those factors in mind, do you have any concerns about the possibility of a plebiscite? That's been quite a hot topic today that was being discussed, as was funding for the Yes and No campaigns. Do you believe a No campaign would exacerbate these negative, these discriminatory kind of experiences that young LGBT people do face?
Well, I think that whatever route is chosen, whether it's a plebiscite or a debate in Parliament or not doing anything about it, there are some risks to the mental health of people in the LGBTI community, and I hope that whatever form the debate takes, that people can be as moderate as possible in the statement of their positions rather than upsetting people, both LGBTI people and also, to be fair, people who are advocating no change and who themselves receive abuse in various ways. On the question of whether there should be a plebiscite or not, I don't really have a view. Certainly the Commission doesn't have a view. But whatever way this debate proceeds, it's important that there be moderation in the campaigns and statements and debates.
Speaking of moderation then, does the National Commission have a view on the proposed changes to 18C from the Racial Discrimination Law of Australia?
Once again, we're not involved in that. Mm-hmm. We stick to trying to get better mental health care for people. We're mainly interested in the provision of services, both health services and things like housing and so on. In those areas, we are concerned about discrimination against LGBTI people. We're also concerned about discrimination at work. Mm-hmm. There are surveys finding that quite a few workforce participants, something like 10% of LGBT people a few years back, had been refused employment or denied a promotion based on their sexuality, and that many more than that feel they have been the subject of discrimination in their employment because of their sexual orientation. And people are frequently vilified or harassed on the basis of their sexual orientation or sex and or gender identity. There's a great deal of survey information saying something which I think is obvious anyway.
What can we do to put out the word to people who are facing this sort of a thing and have not been able to or do not feel comfortable seeking support?
Well, I think almost before answering that, we have to say that the services need to improve. They are not free from discrimination themselves and a bit of stigma and prejudice against people because of their sexuality or because of their mental health problems. It's well known, for example, that, you know, if a person goes to a doctor with, say, a sore back, they're treated much more seriously than if they go to a doctor with a sore back and mention they have a mental illness. Mm. And likewise, the treatment of people with mental illness, sometimes treatment of LGBTI people, may be overshadowed by a preconception of what they're like, what their problems are, and so on, that causes some discounting of their real problems.
Is there anything else that needs to be discussed about mental health in the LGBTI community?
I've sort of said it, but I just want to emphasise that the mental health of LGBTI people is not something to be taken lightly. Exactly the opposite. It is, unfortunately, unduly high. Suicide rates are high. Suicide attempts are high by the standards of any other group in our community. And the increased risk of mental ill health stems from experiences of stigma, prejudice, discrimination or violence on the basis of being LGBTI. And services and programs for mental health need to be sensitive to people's needs and preferences to better understand the social, cultural, biological factors that underlie stigma and discrimination and the targets of it and the ways it can be prevented. So we must recognise the circumstances such as economic and social disadvantage, personal trauma, discrimination and social exclusion that create problems for people, and we must insist on investment in the right support at the right time for people who need it.
Well said. Thank you for joining us, Professor Fells.
Pleasure.
You're on The Informer.
Thank you to today's guests, Professor Alan Fells and Professor Margaret Kelleher. Today's show was produced by Ruby Susan and myself. For a podcast of tonight's program and other stories, head to joy.org.au/The Informer. The Informer will be back tomorrow night at 6:30 with David Gale.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.